What do you want?
I want you to stop me.
You'll stick me with it before I can do anything.
That's right. So what have you got to lose? Stop me.
Crying isn't gonna help.
Please. I'll do anything.
Say four words.
Okay.
Say.
Say what?
I want to die.
I don't know if I can say that.
Sure you can. Repeat after me.
I
want.
What?
Two.
Two.
Die. Die.
I don't want to die!
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason, and with me today is Sam, as well as Trish.
Hey.
My thumb is out.
Yeah.
Is that how you got here today?
It is. You, I actually have what they call a hitchhiker's thumb.
You totally, it is.
Oh, yeah, you do.
You put it straight up, and like the tip is pointing at like 90 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah, it is crazy. We're all got our thumbs up right now. Yes.
Most of us kind of do it, but.
Yeah, I probably, out of the three of us, have the worst hitchhiker thumb. Sam's got to be specific, because it's like pointing in a very... 90 yes. degrees.
I'm going this way.
Yes.
Wherever you angle that wrist.
I actually have to like tilt my thumb to get in that direction because I've probably got the straightest of the bunch of us. And
I have a tiny thumb.
I'd say yours and mine, Trish, are about
normal.
Equal. Yours is a little steeper than mine.
Mine's a little steeper, but I have in the normal realm.
This very visual thing we're doing on an audio podcast.
We'll post a picture of my thumb as part of
it. Oh, there we go. We'll get all our thumbs up in a row, and you can
that's
guess
the only
which
picture
one's
you're
which.
Ever going to get of us.
Exactly. Whose thumb is whose? We get recognized in public. I know that thumb. That would be really specific.
That would be. Hey, your thumb. You're the host of my favorite podcast.
And we really hope that we're at least somebody's favorite podcast.
Yes.
Well, honestly, if they're not listening, they don't know about the thumb thing.
Exactly.
No.
Next thing you know, people are wearing our thumbs on their t-shirts.
That would be so cool. Well, hey, I've got an armpit that's been in a commercial.
Ooh.
Yes. And I've also got my...
Slowly getting your body parts out there.
Yeah. Eventually you'll have a whole person. And then a picture of my ass made the rounds in Spain at some point, apparently.
How?
It was way back when I was in my 20s. I was on this music show where I was...
He did it for the money.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And a friend of mine and I did a joke where we did the sort of hot ass thing where you put your finger on your butt and somebody took a picture of it. And then they went traveling to Spain, and that person had it attached to something. I mean, the picture was actually attached to like a binder or a folder or something like that. People kept asking her about this photograph.
Oh my gosh!
I semi-famous ass. It was cold, for the record.
Your butt is big in Spain.
Because it sure ain't in real life. Things you never knew about Sam.
He's got a semi-famous ass.
Semi-famous ass and a semi-famous armpit. Let's go for the trifecta and get my thumb out there, folks.
Yeah, assume it'll be the thumb.
Then next, an elbow. Maybe one of the lobes.
Yeah, it'll be my funky eyebrows. Mm-hmm.
They are pretty funky eyebrows. Mm-hmm.
All right, today we are going to be talking about the Rutger Hauer classic, The Hitcher, and its remake.
I so can't wait to talk a bitch about this.
I mean, last week we did mention we did want to talk about Rutger Hauer and his passing and kind of celebrate his legacy with some of the films that at least are applicable to our show.
Yes.
And we've been sitting on The Hitcher for quite some time, so now's the time to dust that one off and bring it to you guys. This is an episode I've been waiting to do because I have strong feelings about both films, to be honest.
Yes.
Yeah. There was, like, I hadn't seen the original in a long time. And so this was like just, I'm like, oh, I'm seeing a lot of stuff going on.
This is like one of my favorite Rutger Hauer movies. And it's, to be honest, it's a pretty pedestrian script. It's not changed a whole hell of a lot for the remake. But this is a great example of how much a nuanced performance Hauer gives can really change a movie.
Yes.
Yes.
Despite critics at the time kind of slamming this movie, I think time has reviewed it a lot better.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. I remember the first time I saw this movie, surprisingly enough. I was in the basement at my cousin Lana's place in Saskatoon after a family vacation.
That is very specific.
Yes.
That's right.
So shout out to my cousin Lana, who probably doesn't listen, but that's okay.
Shame on you, Lana.
Nice. No, I don't remember my first. I think it was probably on VHS rent.
Oh, yeah, it's probably something similar. I mean, I owned it on VHS at one point.
Oh, wow.
And still need to replace that copy.
Yeah. Yeah. It still really, really stands up well. I mean, I really enjoyed my rewatch of it recently because it's been a while since I've seen it. And it was just, I'm like, this is really a good example of a well-made suspense movie. And if you're really paying attention, there's a real story there. It's not just a Prey and Predator type of film.
Yeah.
There are, like, it stands up. There's some giant holes.
Oh, there's holes.
But, like, you can put a Mack truck through these holes. But, I mean, when you talk about the performances, when I was watching this one, I'm like, Rutger Hauer, like, what he does with this is...
Mm-hmm. Considering how little screen time he actually has in this movie, that was one of the things that I recognized this time around is that he doesn't have as much screen time as I recall him having.
No,
because he's got so much presence that's built so early, and it builds that tension. And there are quite a few scenes that are meant to be scary that you don't actually see him in, like when Jim's at the diner and finds the finger in there. We don't see him.
Huge hole, by the way.
Yeah, huge hole. I mean, you probably noticed that.
Yeah.
But overall, like, this film initially in 1986 did not review well. It certainly didn't do very well. Budgeted at $6 million and only made 5.8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it was a bomb. So it's a miracle it even got a sequel, let alone a remake.
Yeah. I think the remake is because it's so well loved. It's one of the movies that
VHS really gave this movie life.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. There's no question. Right. And I mean, and they were trying to bank on Thomas Howell's growing popularity because this was just after the Outsiders movie came out.
And this was his first lead, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was. I mean, Outsiders is kind of an ensemble, but he was the main character in that. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But,
he was Ponyboy, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah,
and that's the protagonist of the book.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I know Siskel and Ebert certainly didn't like this movie. They both gave it zeros.
Oh! Wow.
And thankfully, the movie has aged a whole lot better than Siskel and Ebert's review. But I was fascinated by it, so I'm going to let you guys hear that for yourselves.
Okay.
And it's interesting because, I think we feel a whole lot better about this film and generally the reviews as well, and I'll tell you the stats afterwards.
And our next film is the disgusting, meaningless shocker called The Hitcher. We're continuing to do this in alphabetical order, and it's a bad year for H's. This was another variation on the indestructible killer movie, sort of a son of Friday the 13th. It starred Rutger Hauer as a psychopath who hitched a ride with a young man and chased him and a girl he met all over the western countryside, piling brutality upon brutality, almost in slow motion. That's right. Take your time. Shoot every part of the car. Wait for the kid. At this point, we really like to have him almost blow the kid away so the movie will be over and we can go home because we've had a horrible time in this picture. The film, though, outdid itself with an incredible scene where the girl that this guy is traveling with is tied between two trucks. And then, yes, the trucks go this way and her body goes that way in two parts. And I saw that scene developing, and I said to myself, no, they're not going to really do that. Someone's going to stop in and save her, and no, no one did. Now, I have nothing against violent films as long as they try to make some sense or put some kind of spin on their violence. Violent films have made my best 10 list, but The Hitcher was simply nonstop mayhem.
Well, you know right away, when they abandon reality, in other words, this movie moves within the first 10 minutes to a point where it's metaphor. It's not supposed to be taken seriously. They're trying to make some kind of a statement. And the statement they're trying to make turns out to be a very sick one because, of course, the symbolism at the end of the movie indicates that this young man, having now killed the Hitcher, has become the Hitcher.
That's
in other
words,
this will become his mission to go and find another young victim and torture him. So that the movie is extremely sick in its underlying orientation.
That's the same premise of the Friday the 13th movies. And Roger, what it is really based on is sequelitis. Because the killer is reincarnated in the Friday the 13th movies so that they continue and make another one. Only I don't think we're going to see Hitcher 2.
You never
know. At least I'm not.
Okay. Well, I think you will, though, because that's what you get paid for.
Not enough.
Comments?
Oh, yeah. My. They missed the point of this movie.
Well, there's two things. There's something they did say about, like, the indestructible killer. There are actually a couple of points where he is. Like, if you're thrown out of a car at anything over, like, 30K... you're not going to get up as easily as you did.
Well, I mean, for action and
if
thriller
you hit
fare,
pavement,
sure, you're going to take some damage. This guy's a little more resilient, but I mean, so's Bruce Willis in Die Hard. Like, so,
yeah, but still,
yeah. I mean, there's some moments where you have to suspend your disbelief, but on the whole, he's not the indestructible killer.
No.
Oh, and also the fastest killer I've ever seen. Because here's the thing. When they do talk about the thing where she's put between two trucks, he can, like, finagle that whole amount of shenanigans in a really short period of time.
Yeah, he managed to get her tied up pretty quickly.
He did,
like,
yeah.
Less than 8 minutes. That's unreasonable.
Well, if Jim Halsey was in the shower as long as I like to take showers, he had all the time in the world.
Yeah. Okay, but I'm estimating he's taking a reasonable shower because, like, he was in the shower for a while she was out there. So, like, even then is half that time.
Yeah,
I think he was out of the shower getting dressed as he was taking her out.
Yeah. But this also speaks to how effective that scene was because Siskel and Ebert talk about that scene as if they saw her get torn in half.
And
you don't.
No.
It is suggested.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They definitely do in the remake. I mean, that was one of the comments by the writer. Like, he thought it would do better if it was gorier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, well, he got his wish, at least in that scene. It's like, okay, this is the pinnacle scene that really drives the rest of the movie. You should see the kill. It kind of cheats the audience.
It works so much better in the original.
Yeah, it's not like you don't know what happens, and I don't really need to see the guts spilling out.
No, and it was more disturbing if you see it in your head. But I wanted to talk about their feelings about that scene where they felt it sent the wrong message. They missed what was happening there. They really did. Because that whole thing was to set up Jim's powerlessness against this guy. And it sets up the final scenes of the movie. He's been so powerless against this guy all the way along, and this just puts the cap on it, right?
Well, and part of why Rutger Hauer is toying with him specifically is he's trying to toughen this guy up to get him to a point where he will kill him.
Yes, he wants to die.
He wants to die. There's that really key moment in the movie where Jim first picks him up, and he's got this drive-away car he's taken across the country mm-hmm. to deliver. And he picks up the hitcher, John Ryder. And once John kind of reveals his colors and is threatening, it's like, say four little words.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to die. Exactly. And the first time he says it, he's like, he says it in a way where, say I want to die. And then he repeats it. And that look on his face, and it's not yeah. like he wants him to repeat it anymore. He's saying an affirmation yeah. of himself. Yes. He is living a life he doesn't want to live anymore.
Although he can't control himself.
Although yes. there was one part, too, where it started at the beginning. He's like, say four little words. And because he says it so fast, it's like, I want to die. Like, for some reason, at that point, I was laughing. I was going, I might be that smart. I should be like, that's three. Wanna is one word.
I'd even argue that it's not really a word.
Yes.
It's a dictionary. But yeah, I want to die. But yeah, but that one's just, yeah.
And he chose Halsey because Halsey was the first person who had fought back successfully.
Yeah.
Right? He got out of the car. That's just like, okay, this guy might be strong enough to do what I want done, what I need done.
Yeah. No, and you get the feeling, here's this serial killer who knows he has these compulsions he can't control. And possibly even, you could go deeper, maybe he's possessed with an evil that is undefinable. And you can certainly make an allusion that something that Siskel and Ebert says, that he's trying to make Jim the next one, the next hitcher. And even I thought, well, they might be trying to go that way.
That seems just a reach to me.
And I thought maybe, but to me, he's building him to be strong enough to kill him.
Yeah,
I mean, there's lots of mm-hmm. things you can just try to fill some of the void with the holes you're talking about of, well, what could they have expanded on? Well, and I don't know why they didn't take some of those ideas and put it in the remake.
Yes.
Well, they should have had more. Yeah, because I wanted a little bit more. A little more understanding, like, sort of the hitcher. And, like, but there's that one point where you're talking about, like, how he's trying to toughen him up so that he will kill him.
Mm-hmm.
It's the truck scene where he finally does, and he's like, you were such a waste of, and it's like, I've just wasted my time trying to do this because you can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, it's mm-hmm. that frustration you get. It's like, damn it, I wasted all that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the best he could hope for now is he gets arrested in the state with the death penalty.
And they're in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another hole in the movie. And they do fix it in the remake. That's one thing that they did
New Mexico.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they established that they're traveling in a logical direction. He's going from Chicago to California.
Yeah, yeah.
Why would he go through Texas?
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense, whereas in the remake, Jim's with his girlfriend on a road trip to Lake Havasu. Or they're just going to spring break.
Yes. Yeah, so that's one thing that they did fix.
Lake Habasu, I wrote that down because I was like going, I just made me think of Piranha 3DD. I don't know why. Because I'm like going, is that where if they survive this, that's the next movie and it's not going to go well.
There's your double feature.
Yeah.
Because like, I'm pretty sure it's like a New Mexico lake.
Meanwhile, in Lake Habasu.
Yeah. Like, New Mexico is just having a shit show that whole week.
Yeah. Chaos, blood, guts everywhere.
Worst spring break ever.
Love that. It makes the remake so much better just thinking about that.
Absolutely.
It's just the prequel to Piranha 3D.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. Meanwhile, over here.
Yeah.
Same day.
Exactly.
Yeah, but yeah. On the whole, I one of the things that works so well in the original is the mood, right?
Mm-hmm.
The way it's shot, it creates tension mm-hmm. through its lack of activity, right? There's these slow moments. It's like, okay, when's he going to show up again? What's he going to do next?
Yeah, and I don't feel that they're slow for the most part.
I don't. They're just slow enough.
They're good tension builders yeah. throughout, I think.
I do have issues. I remember the first time I saw it, and that's that finger in the fries thing. Mm. It stunned me. Yeah. Shocked the hell out of me. I was 17
Original
years old.
Script, it was supposed to be an eyeball.
The finger would be hidden in the fries better, so yeah. I get it.
Well, yeah. The eyeball was supposed to be inside the burger. But it's like, no. Like,
no.
There's, well, how are you getting it in there without anybody noticing?
Exactly.
Like, there's two people in the diner.
Like, the fry you could do more easily. And the eyeball plus, too. Like, what is he... What's the reveal there? Like, if you squish it with your teeth, you're like ooh, what? Like, just something's in my burger, mm-hmm. like a pickle that's really squishy.
And there's something unintentional there that I think works really well. I don't know if you noticed, but John Ryder in the original film had two wedding rings. So, you know, there could be this haunted loss that he's had, but my guess is they're trophies.
Yeah.
And so if he's cutting off fingers to get the trophies, he's got a couple lying around.
He's got, but it's not just his, he's got two wedding rings on, there's other rings on his other fingers.
Yeah. So
he's a trophy collecting serial killer.
Yeah. And it's very subtle.
Yeah.
Like it's something I didn't notice for most of my watches, to be honest.
No, it wasn't until this watch that I noticed it for the first time, probably, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, admittedly, it has been a long time since I watched it, and I'm glad we did because I still love this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just a few bits where I'm like, wait, how did he get from like there to there?
Yeah, and again, this and is where we have to sort of, we've talked about it many times, about the suspension of disbelief, right? Yeah.
Like, how does he, tracking somebody before cell phones, what are you doing? You're not doing very well. Like, you can't.
Well, I mean, it's not like
they're ahead of him.
Yeah, I mean,
how did he get there?
You're taking stops to refuel, you're getting taken stops to take a piss or whatever. I mean, there's things you can do to explain that if you show it. They didn't show it in the original film.
No.
Where they did wind up doing a little bit of that in the remake, actually.
They did, yeah, just a little bit, because they recognized that that was a bit of a complaint about the original.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, otherwise you're hitchhiking with speed freaks.
Like, and the other thing about it, too, is, If you're gonna go that route where you can't explain some of it, maybe go that metaphysical route where you're saying like it isn't evil that just knows how to find stuff.
Yeah, but I think that the fact that he's just a person.
Oh, I like that. But what I'm saying is like either explain how this crazy ass stuff happens, or make it supernatural. Just kind of make your choice.
Well, I mean,
it was doing both.
It's not like he didn't know what direction Jim was going. So hops in a vehicle that's doing well above the speed limit, maybe. You know, it's going to be easy to catch somebody if that other somebody is actually following the law.
And there's that, and a lot of times Jim was on foot, right, was walking places, so he had plenty of time to get to most of these places ahead of him, right? And in the police station, he was obviously...
But on foot, where is he going? Because there's other bits, too. Like, if he's going off to this and there's an intersection, how does he know where to turn if Jim's on foot?
Well, he might be a good tracker.
Yeah. There's just an assumption there that that's what he is, right? Yeah. I mean, he is a predator and a hunter, right? I mean, you have to sort of assume that he's watching Jim for the most part, and then once he figures things out, he's getting ahead of him or following to his next
destination. Yeah, I mean, there is a certain amount of... You got to give Siskel and Ebert a little bit of kudos there, because there is a bit of tropiness to the character.
Yeah.
I never thought he was above human, just slightly better.
He was one of those wings. Well, when they talk about it, like, I wish it would have been something like he had no fingerprints. He had all the stuff, like he was scrubbed. Like, the reason he was so good at this because he was kind of trained like this. Like, that's sort of what I estimated this character was probably supposed to be. And because he was doing some dodgy shit, he was scrubbed from society. So he could.
He's been doing this a very long time.
But like, he probably did something like this for the military or something, that's why he's so good. But then when they let him go, or he just left, because he probably would just take off.
And that's part of what drives the film, too, is you wanting to know more about this guy and not really getting it.
No.
No.
All right. Well, let's see what we can get out of the 1986 trailer.
On the long, lonely highway, only his dreams for company. Until...
My mother told me never to do this.
Before many miles, he'll wish he'd taken his mom's advice. When Jim Halsey let the hitcher into his car, he opened the doors of hell.
What do you want?
I want you to stop me.
Once you've met the hitcher, you'll never pick up another.
My wallet's in my pocket.
Shut up! We know how to do it.
Jesus!
Why are you doing this to me?
A smart kid. I'll figure it out.
I didn't do it. I didn't do any of it. I'm not a killer.
This morning, this guy tried to kill me. He's been following me ever since.
That was The Hitcher from 1986, directed by Robert Harmon, who directed mostly TV stuff, Blue Bloods, Jesse Stone, those TV movies with Tom Selleck.
Oh!
He works a lot with Tom Selleck. Yeah. Most of his career has been Tom Selleck stuff.
Yeah, and Nowhere to Run, which was that Jean-Claude Van Damme?
That was Van Damme.
Yeah, written by Eric Red, who wrote Blue Steel, and actually had some writing credits for our episode 176.
That'd be Near Dark.
Near Dark.
And you can actually tell, like, when you know that and you watch them, it's like, oh yeah, I can totally see that in here.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely a tone that's very similar. Originally, his script was, like, over 300 pages.
Whoa.
Like, this was would have clocked in under its original script over 3 hours long, and it was super gory, apparently.
Oh, wow.
Well, I can't conceive of this as a 3-hour movie.
No.
Not unless you're telling a lot more writer's story.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, you have to, like, at that point, if you're going to do that, I was always expecting that they had all these unsolved murders, and, like, you just expand on that, like, the FBI is, like, going, oh, we heard about this, blah, blah.
No, this thing would have been exhausting at over 3 hours, for sure.
You could drive across the country and just watch this movie.
Yeah.
We could go to Edmonton and just watch the movie.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah, 3 hours, crazy. But IMDb rates this as a 7.3 out of 10. Which is a whole lot better than it probably was original ratings. And Rotten Tomatoes was 61% critic score and a 74% audience score, so fairly similar.
And I think that's fair, just because if you watch it and get it sort of engulfed in that world, it creates tension really well.
Yeah, and of course, starring Rucker Hauer, who we've talked about before in episode 39,
Lady Hawk,
and episode 56,
Blind Fury.
Oh, Trish is doing it now too. Yes.
I'm on board with this one. I'm like Rucker Hauer. I remember those guys.
Of course, see Thomas Howell as Jim Halsey. He's been in E.T. and The Outsiders and a lot of 80s favorites. And then as you got older and then you see Thomas Howell and your heart sinks.
Which is unfortunate. Yeah, because he's a good actor, but he kind of got pigeonholed in these bad TV roles mostly.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of stuck with him ever since. But then there's Jennifer Jason Leigh, who you probably most recently saw in Hateful Eight and Annihilation, and she is spectacular every time you see her on screen. It is crazy that she doesn't have an Oscar. She does have nominations, but doesn't have that prestigious statue, and it's bizarre that she doesn't.
It is really odd that she doesn't.
Just more proof that sometimes they're giving awards to the wrong people. They're just doing something that's popular that year. They're not doing the right thing.
Yeah. For sure. Jeffrey DeMunn is also in here as Captain Estridge, and most recently saw him in The Walking Dead and Green Mile and The Mist.
And The Blob.
And The Blob? Did I miss The Blob?
You missed The Blob. Yay, Sam! Episode 19.
Should I be keeping score of this?
It has become a bit of a competition while you've been away.
Yeah. Okay, well, last time, let's see, Sam got one over on you.
But I had one on him.
That was a push.
I don't want a scorekeeper. I guarantee you
he has one that I didn't get. But yeah, I was rather proud of that one, though.
Yeah, most of the roles in this movie are smaller ones because everybody dies pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
John M. Jackson, I wanted to mention, was Sergeant Star, and he's kind of made his career as that NCIS guy. He was in JAG as the same character, and A Few Good Men as might as well have been the same guy, but not quite the same guy.
When you talk about typecasting, there's some actors you're just like, oh yeah, that's what that is.
Yeah. There's actually quite a few recognizable people. Billy Green Bush was one of the troopers. He was in Critters. Mm-hmm. Jack Thibault was another trooper, was in Untouchables, the TV series, and Escape from Alcatraz. Gene Davis was another trooper. He was in Universal Soldier. Armin Shimerman was probably the most recognizable kind of just small role guy as the interrogator. And most people remember him as Quark from Star Trek DS9 and the principal in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
That was it. I didn't look it up, but I was just looking at him going, oh, who are you?
Yeah, John Van Ness was in another great horror movie called Tourist Trap, and Henry Darrow was another trooper, Hancock, and he's most famous for being fucking Zorro.
Yeah.
Like, there's some cool people in here that have no screen time at all.
Kind of the Tim Burton thing is like, hey, I'm doing a movie. You want to be in it for a couple minutes?
Yeah.
Or maybe, I don't know. Maybe that was the 3 hours they signed off on and they had more time.
I thought it was going to be in the movie more.
I thought I'd have an actual part in this movie. I guess not.
I didn't know I was going to arrest him and then get murdered.
I didn't know I'd have a dog eating me partway through.
Yeah, that was probably the goriest scene in the whole movie, actually, was that scene with the dog.
Yeah, you know, for the original, so much,
but
licking blood. The blood.
Oh, but he's licking him, and then at one point you hear, and like he's grabbing on to the back of that neck. He's grabbing onto flesh.
Yeah, but that's a audio cue. Yeah.
It is, but I'm looking at that dog.
Yeah, I mean, you see a little bit more of that in the remake scene.
Yeah.
It's definitely a bloodier scene, but I love the suggestion of violence in this movie.
It's one of the things that makes this movie superior to the remake, surprisingly enough, is this showing less. I'm sure I've said it before, is I do like horror that leaves a little bit to my imagination, because my imagination is far scarier than anything you can show me.
Yeah.
You know, and Entertainment Weekly had, in, I think, somewhere in the top 15 scariest horror movies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people do figure it's scary, and even Siskel and Ebert were describing it in a more visceral way than it actually is.
Yeah. Well, when you're talking about, like, a visceral reaction, the family... when it's the two kids and you see them in the back and then the bear pops up and you're like, oh, that's just another kid playing, and it goes down and it's him, and I'm like, oh, but then they don't show the carnage of the family.
Yeah, when they catch back up to the car, really, and you're just seeing some blood dripping out of the door and he's like, stay back.
Yeah, I don't need to see that. I get it.
Yeah.
I can already imagine, and I'm already horrified.
See, it's funny because Val watched the remake with me because she hadn't seen it.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of those times you're like, no, they're not going to do that.
Yeah. And she's like, she checked out as soon as that happened.
Yeah.
Even though you don't see it, she checked right out. She's like, no, I'm done.
Yeah.
I can't. Just even the thought that they kill children in a movie just makes her really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I know a lot of people, specifically parents, that have problems with that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I'm not a parent.
Yeah, I don't feel it. But I mean,
but I get it. I get it, because it touches home in a way you don't want to. It's not comfortable at
it
all.
It is. It's uncomfortable. But here's the problem I sort of have with that is, like, there's children. Horrible things are happening to children all the time. And I know you don't want to think about it. And it's like, in a movie, you get upset about it. Maybe get more upset when it actually fucking happens. Like, maybe get on that. Don't worry about it in a movie. At least we know those kids are still alive, as far
in
as
reality,
we know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. No, it's true. But it does... what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to make you uncomfortable.
Well, it's supposed to make you think this is pure evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is kind of the point is, yes, this guy that's building Halsey up to be something, and is, in a way, he's taunting him, killing the people around him, trying to make him a little bit numb to the death, but also rescuing him from the situations that he himself put Halsey in the first place.
Like when he's in jail and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
He's setting him up, but it's not a case of trying to get him arrested and making him responsible for the Hitcher's crimes. It's to harden him.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's so much to harden him as to drive him to the point where he will do what he wants.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. To harden him to a point where he's capable of being a killer to be able to take him out.
Yes.
Yeah. But see, I don't even really kind of allocate that with, like, being hardened. I think it allocated that as, like, to get him so viscerally upset. Like, I feel it's a more emotional place he's trying to take him to.
Well, and I think that's something that the remake touches upon a little bit is And they don't do near as good of a job at it, obviously. I think poor Sean Bean was the right guy, but getting the wrong direction. And I didn't feel like he really understood the character until about an hour into the movie.
Well, they diluted the story.
It's...
Or that his motivation quite a bit at the beginning of the movie, because they...
It feels more like he's just taunting him, having fun.
Well, no, it almost... I didn't feel
like he was a tortured character until well into the movie.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even get that at any point in the movie. Yeah. I don't think I got that from Sean Bean at all. I felt he was terribly miscast, honestly.
Not until the truck. Yeah. Well, I mean, not nearly as bad as Jake Busey in the sequel, but... Yeah.
I haven't seen the sequel, I will give you that.
Okay. Something that they did to delude that really bothered me, actually, was they sexualized... suggested that he's attracted to the Grace character,
mm-hmm.
right? Yes. The first time is like, how long have you been putting it to her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's gross.
Yeah, it does seem more sexual than tortured.
Right? Yeah, and maybe that he's attracted to that character. But you can kind of, I don't see it, but I've seen some of the arguments that maybe Rutger Hauer was attracted to Jim Halsey.
That's what I got.
At the same time, there's that homophobic bit at the stop, the construction site. Is it? Like, I don't know. Like, I've seen comments that this is a very homophobic movie, and in its themes, I'm like, well, if you want to see it that way, then maybe. But
you could make that argument for almost any film.
I could kind of give it a little bit, but in a weird way, it's sort of like... The Hitcher knows how to use that homophobia as well.
Yeah, that's
like
when he's doing that,
he knows how to get through the stop. He's aware, but he might not, the character itself might not be homophobic, but he's like, I know how homophobia can help me get my job done.
Yeah, no, he was doing that to manipulate them through the stop
and
quicker. Because it was making the construction guy uncomfortable. And yes, that promotes homophobia little way.
It points it out.
It points it out.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. It draws attention to it, but I don't know that it promotes it.
Yeah, bad choice of words.
And it's then there was the other bit too, where I think like Jim, it's at the very end, and like he hits him, and like he kind of touches his face and like licks his hands, like he's like, it's very coveting, like mm-hmm. it's like, oh, I have a taste of what I want. Like there is something there, but it's like it's the most twisted version of desire. I'd feel like he desires him to kill him, but it's very mixed up.
This feels more like a mentorship to me,
in a kind of way. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, but if he gets him to do what he wants, he owns him. Like it's kind of a possessiveness.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. No, I mean, there's
like
a certain
that desire
amount of,
is possessive.
Yeah, because every time Jim fights back, he gets this little smile because he's just you could see the torture on his face most of the time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is working in the way he wants, which is why he's continuing.
Which is what I'd say is a very toxic relationship.
Yeah. I mean, in the remake, there's a scene, when they first see the Hitcher and almost run him over, there's a thought that was running through my mind. It was very different from the original, was because we see the Hitcher get dropped off at the gas station by the big rig. So he didn't kill that guy. So it makes me wonder, it's like, well, you almost hit me and ran away. Now you're prey.
Yeah.
If you had stopped,
like
I might have been.
It's a movie.
Right?
They twisted around and he also has motive.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but then he's just randomly killing everybody at that point.
See, yeah, so, it loses that bit of hold on you.
It does. Yeah. It doesn't stick. And you could easily say that car that was flashing that when he was broken down
could have been
had
his own.
There could have been dead people
I assumed there was a dead person in there. Mm-hmm. Like in the original. And then what's so funny about this one too is how he uses again the societal manipulation where it's like, oh yeah, no, you guys didn't pick him up, and like kind of him and like the cashier sort of use that those social mores to coerce him to take him into his car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually liked that bit. I mean, I think if this hadn't been a remake, I think I would have enjoyed it more, to be honest with you.
As a pedestrian type of horror film, sure.
Yeah.
Like, the motivations feel weak throughout the film. I don't get the same kind of performance out of Sean Bean, who I think is capable of it.
Oh, absolutely capable.
And I think might have been creepier if they would have just let him be have his British accent in the movie. I think that was hampering his performance right off the bat.
And I like the idea of where he's doing it just because he can.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's more frightening than having a motivation like you didn't pick me up. Like, that's
There are movies that do that a lot better, like Wolf Creek.
Yeah. But I mean, like, when we're talking about the original.
Joyride.
Yeah. The original, though, he's sort of he is a tortured character, but he's doing it because he can.
Yeah.
Oh, for
nobody's
sure.
Nobody's stopping him.
No, yeah. And that is part of the motivation, I think, is stop me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. He says it outright in the trailer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. He says it outright. That's what he wants somebody to do.
Yeah. It's sort of, and plus, I think he also thinks if it's a person tough enough to try and stop him, at least he'll have had the ultimate hunt before he goes down.
Yeah, well, yeah, true. You guys ready for the other trailer?
Yes.
Sure. And then there's something I want to bring up about the station wagon. Don't let me forget.
Okay. Ooh, station okay. wagons. All right.
Why don't you tell us what happened?
I am telling you the truth. It was pouring rain and it just needed a lift.
Anybody see you pick this guy up?
I don't know. You just wanted to do something nice for the guy.
Hi, I'm John Ryder. Strangers think I'm trustworthy. Aren't you? You to say four little words. I want to die.
That was The Hitcher from 2007 by director Dave Myers, most famous for doing a shitload of music videos.
A shitload of music videos.
A shit ton.
Like 140 some of them.
Oh, it's crazy, because he wasn't all that successful at this.
No.
Screenplay was by Jake Wade Wall, who had most recently responsible for writing the new Jacob's Ladder. That's out pretty soon here.
Yeah, cool. He's got a lot of remakes on his
catalog. And When a Stranger Calls, 2006, along with Eric Berndt, who wrote Virtuosity and Romeo Must Die, a couple of little B-list greats, I would say. Budgeted at $10 million, grossed $25.4 million.
Not bad.
So, I mean...
It did okay, I guess.
It's okay. Yeah. It's, you know, you're not really making money until you triple your budget, but you got close. Yeah. So,
well, in this instance, considering how little I heard about it, I think if they doubled it, they're probably good.
It did better than the original.
Yeah, but I mean, if they hit double, like, the marketing on it, I don't think you went really high on this.
No. A mild success.
So doubled's probably good.
And this was a Platinum Dunes remake as well, because we're big fans
of
that.
Yes. As soon as I saw that,
I'm like, it's actually even a little bit shorter. IMDb gives this a 5.6 out of 10. And Rotten Tomatoes, the critic score is 21%, and the audience score is a 52%.
Yeah,
so critics were, like, really harsh on this movie.
They are. I'm with the critics.
I am, too. I did not like this movie the first time. I liked it a little bit better the second time, because there's just certain things that I think didn't work as well. As soon as you put it in a couple, it's like in the car. It's like, well, which one's he playing with, and which one's expendable?
That's part of it, yeah.
It is basically, they've taken the C. Thomas Howell character and made him two characters. And then the first part of the movie is for one character, and the second part of the movie is for the other one.
Yeah.
That's how I sort of saw it split up.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of taking Jennifer Jason Leigh's character and just, okay.
Inserting her right at the beginning of the movie.
Inserting her right at the beginning of the movie, except Jennifer Jason Leigh is Zachary Knighton.
Yeah.
Well, no, see, I still don't see that because he's still doing all of the gym
for the most part.
He's still doing all the driving. He's still getting the same threat. He's like, you're a smart kid, you'll figure it out. Like, he's still playing that male protagonist.
And then it switches when he's the one attached to the rig.
Yeah,
so
like I say,
honestly, it's just flipping the script a bit for no real reason.
It's clumsy.
It's clumsy.
The only reason that they did it was because one of the biggest flaws of the original is the relationship between Jennifer Jason Leigh and Jim is it feels really forced.
Yeah, yeah.
It is, like, yeah.
There's no explanation as to why she's on that fucking bus. Right?
No, there is, because we see her get off the bus the first time to go to work.
Oh, that's right, yes.
She lives this small roadside diner. She has to get from one place to another. This is how she gets to work. So that's why.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I think they probably know, like the Greyhound bus knows it goes by there, so they've just made an arrangement.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it does
make sense. You're right. That's absolutely correct.
So they've prior met, and there's a certain
It's still forced.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's too short.
Yeah,
it's not like they have a relationship in this movie. No. But there's at least an attachment. She believes him, supports him. The fact that she picks up a gun to rescue him when the cops come to arrest Halsey, that's a little much.
Yeah,
would you have done that for a guy who was acting strange at a diner?
No, probably not. I don't think I would.
And drew a gun on you in the bus.
Yeah.
Although I have a very weird point. People are doing the oddest things. Like anytime somebody's like calling. Like, nobody understands how stuff works. Like, when you call the cops are like, oh, I better shoot the person who called. That bothers me. And then when she's like, oh, my God, I have to come in and get towels. I'm like, yeah, she's covered in blood, seems really agitated, trying to get towels. I'm guessing this is the person trying to save somebody, not the person who stabbed the person. Most idiots would know this.
Yeah, the remake when she goes to get paper towels because they don't have towels. At a diner.
Yeah, no. Well, when I was looking at the character, that really enraged me. I'm like going, stupid, they have towels. They have tea towels. Make the bitch give you tea towels.
Yeah.
Because this dumbass calls the cops because she doesn't know how stabbing works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I like to give the diner person a wee bit of leeway thinking that she called the cops because thinking there was a problem that needed to be dealt with.
There is a problem that needs to be dealt with.
There needed to be some help. Not that a case of somebody needed to be arrested.
Yeah, but at the same point, she's still there. She's doing that whole thing you can see when she comes out of the bathroom, she's given like the eye of the cops, like, that's the crazy person.
Although, if they had shown one little scene, like one little camera slide of the waitress looking outside into the car, splattered with blood, and bodies sitting in there that aren't moving, then that would have made sense.
Yes.
But even then, why would the person who murdered a bunch of people and left them in the car being like, oh, you have to call the police and I need towels? They're the dumbest murderer ever.
For sure.
So I'm going to just make the assumption they're not dumbest murderer ever.
I probably still would have called the cops or at least 911.
Oh, I would call the cops, but I wouldn't tell the cops. I'm like going, oh, I have murderers here. No, you wouldn't do that because unless you're really freaking stupid.
Yeah, you call them going, there's an emergency
here. An emergency. Bring an ambulance.
Ambulance and police department.
Yeah, because you don't know that they're dead.
Because you don't know the facts. Yeah.
Yes.
Because the first thing you do when you call 911 is they ask you, what's the nature of your emergency? Well, I don't know, but somebody came in here and panicked. And
yeah.
I need two things.
I've seen blood, and I've said, so I need police and an ambulance. Yeah. Take both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what do you got?
Yeah, that was maddening. There's no question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Infuriating where it's like, well, of course they're not going to call. And then at the end, like, he's trying to talk to the cops. Let's talk to the cops. You've seen what they do. Why?
Actually,
I wouldn't trust them.
There's a great bit. Because, I mean, the fact that they made Sophia Bush wind up being the heroic protagonist at the end of the movie when she starts blaming Jim for all of this. it kind of undermines her a little bit.
Yeah.
Going, yeah, like, we could have avoided this if you would have just left the hitchhiker behind.
Well, she's not wrong. And it's the other thing, too, which is really funny. And I wrote this down, like, for both movies, where it's like they're depending on, like, some of these societal things they know to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And really fuck everyone up. And when you don't do them, you're a huge dick, but you survive this movie.
True. There is a bit where she's kind of coming around. It's like they just escaped the cops. They want to go talk to more cops.
Yeah, I don't.
Which was a little silly, but like, we need help. I'm like, no, he killed the help.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to get more
who
people killed?
Helping you?
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I did like that, but it kind of in a funny way.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I don't know if that was meant to be funny, but it was.
Yeah, it made more sense in the original.
Right? Yeah.
Because he's like, I know what happened. I didn't do it. I need help.
Yeah.
Like, he was trying to be upfront about things and try to get himself cleared. In the remake, though,
and people were believing him. Like, they still have to do their due diligence. They kept him in the jail cell, but they knew right away this kid didn't do anything.
Exactly. The guy says, there's no way that kid killed anybody.
Yeah.
Oh, but I loved the one thing they did in the remake where she's in the interrogation room and he's downstairs and they're trying to figure it out. And he's like going, so, okay, the kid was downstairs and she was in there. Like, who the hell did this?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like going, yeah, it's not these two. I don't get it.
Mm-hmm. And granted, some of their actions are just digging them into a deeper hole, which is why Esther Ridge is like, oh, I got to arrest you anyway.
Yeah. Well, I do admit the one point I really liked with the hitcher where she's got the gun on the one cop. But he takes the shot, so it looks really bad for her.
Oh, yeah.
That was beautifully done. There are a few moments where they did things really well.
Yeah.
And actually, I want to go back to the station wagon because they did really well there.
Yes.
Is when they first arrive at the station wagon after they've been killed, did you notice the book that was laying on the ground?
It says, where are you going?
No, it says, will I go to heaven?
Oh, yeah, something like that. Yeah, will I go to heaven?
That's just fucking creepy.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. It was a beautiful little...
Well, they were also saying this was a heavy religious family in the station wagon.
Yeah.
But it also kind of states, too, it's a weird message as a movie The Hitcher is giving. It's like, don't help people out. It will fuck you up, is what the message of The Hitcher is. And it's like this religious family who they're like, oh, there's a person in need. We should help them. And that's why they die.
Yeah.
It kind of suggests that charity and charitable actions. Yeah.
Charitable actions will mess you up. That's what it's basically saying.
Be selfish, you fuckers.
I mean, I think the intent I think the intent was to show this really good thing and this really evil thing.
Yes.
To make the evil look that much more evil.
Yes.
But I mean, yeah, I can see what you're saying.
It may not be the intent of the movie, but throughout a lot of it, it is saying that.
In both movies, to be honest.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Is no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah.
Or just being a little bit of a dick. Yeah, like...
sometimes in your best interest.
Yeah, violating those societal norms.
Or if you're going on spring break, fly to your destination.
Yes. Absolutely.
Or in the remake, also pay attention to the fucking road.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did anybody else think I'm like going, where did he get that? That's a nice car. I'm like, he seems too young to have acquired that car unless he's rich.
Well, you kind of got the impression that there was family money because even where they're going is like they said something about family property up there.
Yeah,
I get the feeling
of them were probably from well-to-do. They weren't. It wasn't exactly a cheap school that he was picking her up at.
Yeah. I know. I was just obsessed with that car for a lot of it.
The car was beautiful.
And it goes away really quickly.
Yes.
It's actually kind of funny how often the characters are on foot in that movie, in the remake.
Yeah.
More so in the remake, though.
Yeah, Jim gets his hands on alternate vehicles quite readily when he needs to. Yeah, there's only a couple scenes where he's really on foot when he leaves the police station and after the station wagon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not even then, after his car gets set on fire.
Speaking of,
we saw one yesterday on fire.
Really?
Yeah. We were on our way to my mother-in-law's, and we were going up Bow Trail, and as we drove past, there's fire engines and cop cars, and we're like, what the hell's going on? And there's a truck on fire.
Was this after you saw the movie?
No, unfortunately. Oh. It was before.
I would have been like, he picked up a hitchhiker.
Gas station explosion? Hitchhiker? Oh, no.
Yeah.
Don't say gas station explosion. I live awfully close to one.
Yeah.
True. You might be far enough away.
I think I'm far enough
away. You're far enough away.
And you've got another building buffering you, so you should be good.
I should be good.
You know what it made me think of? I recently watched all of Good Omens, And there's a whole bit where the one demon guy has his car, and he's been driving it for a very long time while it's still on fire.
Sheer force of will.
Yes.
That's what made me think of it. I'm like going, yeah. And then when he gets to his destination, he gets out and it basically just falls apart.
Yeah. I love
demonic car.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. I love that they kept all the main beats in the remake,
mm-hmm.
but they changed up some of them.
But it felt like a clip show.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, mm-hmm. Here's the best bits of the original movie. And more often than not, I find Platinum Dunes is consistently guilty of doing that in most of their remakes.
Yeah, here's the stuff you'll recognize, and then we're going to try to tie it together with a slightly different story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And that's exactly what it felt like.
Yeah.
It's like
it certainly didn't have the depth of emotion I thought the original had.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, I'm like, we'll keep these beats, but I mean, we'll have people that seem like characters, but you don't feel that much attachment to them.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I think what makes the original work so well is Jim's isolation, right? Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. because you have a couple together, that's taken away right away.
Yeah.
But there is, I think what they could have done, and what was a missed opportunity the whole time with a couple, what you can do is, like, the isolation is, it's like you have that conflict with the hitcher. But if you have a couple that's not getting along, the conflict there is also very dangerous.
Well, that goes back to what Jay was saying when she starts to blame him for picking up the hitchhiker. Mm-hmm. That kind of conflict should have happened really early to create that, the fact that they're together but they're not together.
Well, and there was an argument, like,
he does stuff like this all the time and it bothers her, and it was like kind of really
maybe
it was an ongoing problem with their relationship.
Well, and she wanted, after the first incident, she wanted to just go back home and call off spring break, which probably would have been the end of their relationship, but maybe they've been alive or not, because in my mind I'm like, I think Jim made the right decision. Let's just keep pressing forward, because if you turn around, you're going in his direction.
It was a lose-lose situation.
Yeah, you got to always think that if you're going back, you're going to pass this guy again.
Yeah. I wonder if you would ever think, like, if he's done this so many times, if anybody really did just turn around and go the other way. Mm-hmm. Like, just get out of New Mexico.
Who knows? But I think the whole point of both movies is that nobody's ever escaped him before.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's his motivation in the original, for sure, is Jim stood up to him and successfully got away from it.
Yeah, which was why there was that choice to kind of keep him going, because he was fairly quick on his knife finger, you know, like that trigger finger. He wasn't letting most of the other drivers around Jim get away.
Well, that beetle that passed him, it wasn't much before he picked him up.
Yeah. So I was a little puzzled when the big rig dropped him off in the remake and then kept going. It's like, huh, well, that's odd.
Yeah, because it destabilizes everything about the character, really.
It does. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think in that case, it's because he needed the cover of being a lone traveler. And by killing the truck driver, it wouldn't have served his purpose. It actually would have defeated it.
Yeah.
Because he's intelligent. He's very intelligent killer.
Right? Well, and I mean, these are long-haul drivers. They're probably, trucks are being tracked. And there might have been reasons for not doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he might have been, like, having the truck drivers on his side. He's like, wait, if I can make sure that I'm not associated with any truck driver death, if I need to get from A to B pretty quickly, I just don't have to kill them.
Well, I mean, easier. If they had established him inside the vehicle, I mean, what's to say that wasn't the same truck he pulled Halsey apart with?
Yes.
Ooh.
That would have been really cool if they'd done that, but
that is a good thing.
That would have helped make that movie just a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, just to get
the touch.
Just ties things together a little bit better.
What was that one? Sorry, I'm doing a little bit of a tangent here. What was that movie? It was like Kurt Russell and like Ann Archer and like Yeah, Switch Turn?
Or Switchback, sorry.
Switchback? Yeah. Was it? Yeah, because, like, she gets kidnapped by a group of truckers, and they say, oh, no, we didn't do it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that was Switchback.
I don't remember it. Yeah.
It was weird.
We saw it together in the theater, actually.
Yeah, I don't remember it. I obviously didn't like it.
It wasn't memorable. It wasn't all that memorable, but yes, that's the one you're thinking of.
Okay.
Yeah. There are definitely similar road movies.
Oh, there are. Like, I referenced Joyride as well, which...
Yeah, Joyride I really like, at least the original
one. The original one, yeah. It had all those elements that The Hitcher had, but they added something new to it by the complete anonymity of your villain.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool.
Because all communication between this guy who's tormenting him is all through that CB radio.
And all you see is after effects of his visits.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, I got to watch that one.
It's really good.
Yeah.
I do like how they handled the phone problem where he just decides to break it because he's just crazy.
Yeah.
And then her phone just gets tossed out.
Yeah, when they push him out of the car, her phone goes with it.
But yeah, I think the biggest flaw in that remake, aside from the sort of the Platinum Dunes tendency to just sort of pull key scenes and rework them into an inferior script, was the fact that
it took two people to do that.
Yeah. Well, three, because Eric Red also gets a...
Yeah, but he had nothing to do with it.
Well, no, apparently he was involved in the actual writing of
this. No, I read he wasn't, but he got credited anyway. I mean... Yeah. Usually they will credit the original writer. So.
Yeah, they have because they created the story and the characters, right? Yeah. But the couple thing is what really derailed this movie. Mm-hmm. Because like Chris said, is you have sort of one character as the focus for the first half of the movie, and then for the second half it becomes the other half of the couple. They could have fixed that by having Jim, the new Jim, not make it out of the jail cell.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, you don't have to kill him.
No,
he could have remained locked in there and she got away by herself. Mm-hmm. And that would have, I think, fed the story a little bit better.
Ooh, and you could have had him where he's like, oh, Jim's already dead. And he's just locked down there because he's just like going, you're going to starve down here. Like yeah, it would have been a whole could have messed added up thing. A
whole new element of creepiness to it and changed her motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, then you lose that. You could potentially lose that scene at the end of the movie with the truck.
I mean, it is a very motivating scene, but it doesn't feel like it works as well when through most of it, your protagonist is Jim and then it suddenly switches.
That's honestly, right. Unless you give it a reason to switch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you talk about the tractor trailer thing, I was thinking about this. And because it's so visceral to watch, it could even be, it doesn't have to be some sort of forced relationship. Even just like an acquaintance at the, like if it's a waitress at a diner and I'm watching this happen to her, it's my goddamn fault. That visceralness is more than enough to do it. It doesn't have to be my romantic interest.
Mm-hmm. And that's a valid point.
So, because it's just so horrible. It doesn't matter who's there, really.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. I mean, you could still set it. You still could have set it up so that you still had Jim in that role if you really needed it to be. Right? Jim doesn't get out of the cell, but with her, but he gets him out. He's been dragging Jim around all along.
Yeah,
and he's been making him an unintentional accomplice to all these things that happened between that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think it would have added something to the story and the characters.
It would be a cool reveal where, like, she's been spending all this time, like, in mourning as well, like, just grief. And then he's alive, but not for much longer.
No, exactly. Mm. It's like, well, he wasn't dead, but he is now.
Oh, yeah. That would be such a gut punch. He was alive, but snatched him away.
Yeah. I think that would have really made that remake into something watchable.
Yeah. How do you feel about the endings? Because I feel like the original's kind of clunky and...
So was the remake.
Like, they didn't fix it.
No.
No.
The remake, they did a good job of sort of showing how he got away, how he freed himself enough to get out of the transport.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened in the original? I didn't see
They
much.
Never show it.
Okay, that explains it.
They don't.
I thought I missed it. I rewound it a couple times.
He's eyeing, you can see some suggestion that his plan's happening, and then next thing you know, he's blown through the doors and diving through the window.
Yeah.
But, you know, before that, Halsey just makes the point of like, oh, something's going to happen. I am going to take your vehicle.
And that seems silly.
And make himself a criminal in the process by ditching the protective custody he's already got by going after this guy to murder him.
Did make more sense in the remake, except that why the fuck were they following the transport?
Well, see, I just...
They were just going the same direction. Yeah. One was being transported into a bigger facility, probably.
In Albuquerque, he's taking her.
And that's where she was going for trauma counseling.
Yes.
And that's where the family was going to pick her up. Because
it's probably the next largest city.
Yeah.
Where they could fly into and so on.
Yeah, so they were just... Everybody was going to the same place.
Yeah, but, I mean... Any respectable law enforcement agency is not going to put your victim in that close proximity to the transport truck.
No. I mean, they would have probably been separated by a couple hours, I would think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it could have been that easy where they come across the scene.
And right? Nor, if you're that small of a department, do you want to have all of your guys gone at the same time?
No. That's why I kind of thought he should, like, was he not an external guy that they brought in?
He's like states or something like that.
State trooper?
Well, it's because of most of the local guys who'd gotten killed already.
Yeah.
But the support showed up awfully fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they did. I mean, New Mexico isn't that big of a state either.
Right? No. Yeah, you're right. Like, it should be. But, I mean, for the purposes of the story, you kind of have to have it happen. Yeah.
But it did make more sense in the remake. It's one of the things that they did try to fix. Yeah. Again, it was still clunky, especially when the fucking thing blows up and she still gets out. Unscratched, unscorched.
She's just as unkillable as he is. Yeah. And then when she...
In a short skirt, no less.
And when he's like...
For Pete's sake, put her in some pants.
Yeah, what did he say to her?
Feels good, doesn't it?
I don't feel a thing.
I did like that.
I did like that line.
Yeah, so... I guess in a way, she's been pretty hardened to it too.
Well, the subversion of it where he's saying like, oh, I've made you into what I want. And she's like, no, you haven't, fucker. And then like, that's the last thing you're going to hear.
And it addresses what the Siskel and Ebert review we heard earlier was saying, is that he's turned Jim, or in this case, Grace, into him. Mm-hmm. She's basically saying, no, you haven't. The only reason I'm doing this is because it's you.
Did you have one of these audible... when she shot him in the back and then the shotgun shells formed an H.
Yeah.
I was like, come on, guys. This is just...
Oh, speaking of which, there's one thing.
Hokey. Yeah. H for hokey.
Yes. In the original, did you notice when he jumps out of the transport into Jim's vehicle, there was a roar noise?
Yes.
Yes.
I was like... Wait, did that happen? Am I imagining it?
Well, sometimes I get where you put something unnatural into a scene to have an emotion in there, because I've edited scenes where like it's an argument and I've put a subtle gunshot shell sound in the background to really agitate you as a viewer.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not supposed to notice it, though.
No.
It's supposed to be almost subliminal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't.
It was. No. But yeah, even when he jumps out into the car, into it, I mean, this is an action horror. We see far more implausible things in the Fast and the Furious series.
Oh, my God, yes.
Oh, for sure.
Right? So, yeah, it's implausible, but it's no worse than stuff we're still seeing.
No, and the remakes is the music video equivalent of.
Oh. Yeah.
Lots of music.
Yeah.
Speaking of music video, at the one point where Sean Bean's driving... the Firebird or T-Bird when he's going after the cops.
I was thinking,
and all of a sudden Inch Nails comes in and I'm like going, this movie has been nothing like this until this moment.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought the opening with All American Rejects was like, okay, that was a good song for that. But I got it also sets the pace of like, I'm going to hear a lot of this kind of thing, aren't I?
You are. And it was typical of that particular era of filmmaking, right? Mm. You had these hard rock soundtracks. And sometimes they worked. Daredevil is a great example of a bad movie that had a great soundtrack that actually works for the movie. This is an example of where it didn't work, where they were just jamming and stuff they could get the rights to.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I imagine he didn't have a hard enough time with that. So
yeah.
With all of the... He probably made music videos for every one of them.
Well, once you said music videos, I'm like, oh, that's why that scene happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now I get it.
It feels a longer watch, even though it's like 9 minutes shorter than the original.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It just shows you how less effective the movie actually is. Because at no point does it really feel tense like the original does.
And no, it feels like a chase movie.
Mm-hmm. It does. It feels more like a chase movie where the other one's this openness. Like they show the open road. It feels desolate. It feels desolated. And because of that desolation, you feel isolated.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that was the whole thing about this movie is you feel Jim's isolation and his lack of power, and just you feel how hard this is for him all the way through the movie. And that part of that goes to C. Thomas Howell, and part of that goes to the filmmaker for choosing the scenes he did and shooting it the way he did. Whereas the remake, you never get that feeling, because first off, you have a couple together, right? So you never get that sense of isolation, which we've already mentioned.
Yeah, because they're always there to support each other.
And they keep going to places where there are a lot of people. Right, because that diner has more than one. It has a lot of people, and
there's so many businesses out of business along his route. Yeah. Like that, I kept wondering too. I'm like, if nothing had happened on this trip, he definitely would have run out of gas. 100%.
That's also indicative of that time in the 80s, especially gas stations, because
yeah.
because that wasn't that long after the gas shortage in the United States. Right, so it made sense that some of these gas stations would have gone out of business because of that.
Yeah, and well, in small towns too, it's like, I go to work when I freaking feel like it.
Yeah.
But the only thing that's viable is a gas station.
Really, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just along the highway. It has to be on the highway, or otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah.
Right, because I don't know what kind of industries in New Mexico, but I don't imagine it's a heavily populated state either.
Well, which is why I couldn't quite figure out...
Yes, we're dumb Canadians, by the way, so don't write us if we're wrong.
Which is why I couldn't figure out that one, okay, with the exploding gas station, and everything looked like sand... I think it might have just been the sandstorm. Like, it looked abandoned in some instances, and then in others, I'm like, but if it's abandoned, it shouldn't have that much gas in it, should it?
No, those tanks would have been empty. No, and I think that they would suggest that the sands do fade things and make them look less...
Okay, so it's just getting inside. Because, the phone wasn't working, and I thought, is it abandoned?
Well, I think the suggestion of what happened there is the people were already dead. Yeah. I think there was a suggestion of, and maybe it was cut, or maybe they just didn't fully actualize that scene, but I got the feeling the suggestion that the hitcher had already gotten there.
See that, ahead of him, I would have liked a little more clarity.
If we'd seen
that.
A body,
or like even just a foot sticking out behind a counter,
or a bloody handprint on a window, just something.
And like just Jim just doesn't see it.
Yeah,
that would have sold that more. Because I kept thinking, like, wait, if it's abandoned, there shouldn't be gas there.
Or it may not have been open yet. Who knows? Because right? I mean, he had been walking all night.
Yeah, again, the doors probably would have been locked. Yeah. So,
yeah.
But again,
but the phone should have worked. Yeah. That's what messed it up for me.
At least in the original movie, when he's running two businesses, you can tell it's early in the morning, especially when he gets to the diner and she's just opening up, and she's the first person there. So there's the suggestion of it's really early and things aren't open yet.
Yeah, but you're right. The phone should have worked. But again, that suggests that he was there earlier, so he cut the wire or whatever he did.
But again, that would have helped.
Infer that because they don't show you that, and that's part of what being a film viewer is you do sometimes need to infer things. Because I'm sorry, I don't know about you guys, but I don't necessarily like it when things are spoon fed to me.
I
don't either. And I always and when I see that scene, I've only seen the movie twice, the remake twice, with this last viewing included. But I always assumed in that scene that the hitcher got there first, and just if there were anybody there, he wiped him out. If there wasn't, he just made a nice little trap for.
I don't like it like spoon fed, but like when there's like those inconsistencies and which mess with my inference, then I'm like, well, then I have a bit of a problem because I'm like, then I just get confused and I don't enjoy that.
We do.
But and then Rutger, how he just shows up, throws him the keys like that. I love that moment because I'd be sitting there going like, well, if I pick him up, is that guy just going to kill me?
It's one of those, come on, McKid, get back in the game.
And it really establishes that Ryder's got plans for Jim. He's not just chasing him to kill him and torment him. He really wants something from him. And you never, ever get that
he's
moment.
He's got to push him over the edge to get what he wants.
Right. And you never really get that moment in the
No, I do feel like he's toying with them.
Yeah.
And it's only really late in there where I feel like Sean Bean's performance starts to shift. Oh, I haven't gone through the cast, have I?
No.
I feel like his performance kind of shifts into what Rutger was given, but it's far too late in the film for it to matter.
Exactly, You never get that sense of menace from Sean Bean in that first 40 minutes.
I think what the problem is I have with Sean Bean, and I don't think it's direction. I don't see him in this role for a specific reason where it's like, even as Rutger Hauer is so menacing and so kind of crazy, there's this smooth sort of, there's this weird seductiveness to his character that I felt that Sean Bean completely missed.
Yes.
And if it was somebody else, I could be like, because there's times when you know you're in danger with Rutger Hauer, and like Jim is sitting there and I'm like going, but like you're kind of compelled by this guy. You want to know what he wants with you. Like, would you do that with somebody who looks like they'll just slash your throat? No, you want to be compelled by him.
It says a lot to Rutger Hauer's screen presence when you watch that, and especially in comparison, like we talked about Lady Hawk and how he felt out of place in Lady Hawk, mm-hmm. for the most part. He did not. He felt exactly in place in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like he knew what he wanted to do with this role, and he did it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Pretty much to perfection.
Yeah.
Any flaws in this movie were definitely not due to either of the performances, to be honest.
Yeah. No, I think Sean Bean was well picked, badly directed.
Mm.
Personally,
yeah, and it wasn't given a lot to work with in terms of the script.
I mean,
either.
And maybe this point in his career, maybe he wasn't quite there yet. Like, no. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you first see him, and your first assumption is, well, it's a good thing I know how the original Hitcher dies, because you're going to die too.
Yeah,
because that's just what Sean Bean does.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like if I watched this movie and Sean Bean was just there, I'm like going, oh, okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, credit to where credit's due. Sean Bean was John Ryder. And of course, you all know him from Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones. Sophia Bush, most famous for One Tree Hill, as the impossibly gorgeous girlfriend.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Zachary Knighton was the titular character of Jim Halsey. Ryder and Halsey, the only real returning characters, mm-hmm. along with Lieutenant Estridge. You can see him in Magnum P.I. as Rick.
Happy Endings. If you can watch Zachary Knighton and Happy Endings, one of the most underrated TV shows of all time.
There you go. Neil McDonough, we actually talked about him in episode 97.
Walking Tall.
And you've seen him in two DC multiple DC mm-hmm. projects and Marvel as Dum Dum Dugan. I can't remember his character name, but he's been in the Arrowverse as well.
Mm-hmm.
On pretty much every one of those shows, Flash, Arrow,
Legends of Tomorrow, he's in all of those.
Kyle Davis was the store clerk, and you can see him in the Platinum Dunes remake of Friday the 13th.
Okay.
We'll talk about that in the future.
Maybe.
Maybe someday. Who knows? Skip O'Brien was the sheriff. He was in Blow and Black Sheep.
Yes.
Travis Schultz, who was actually the son, Deputy Harlan Bremer Jr., was mm-hmm. in Hack and Boy Next Door. Also small parts with Danny Bolero, Jeff Hutchinson, Yara Martinez, who's Miss Lint in the new Tick series on Amazon. Unfortunately, we're only going to get the two seasons. Aww. And Lauren Kahn as Marlene. There you go. That is the cast of the remake.
Yeah.
Which I got to way too late, but
we got to it.
much like Sean Bean finally getting the character.
There you go. Follow the theme.
Yeah, right. Exactly. We're just immersing ourselves in this movie.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, I like Sophia Bush,
mm-hmm.
but I think they could have done a lot more with first off the character, and second off given her more to do, right?
Yeah.
Because with Jim in the original, even though he was being carried along by the current and being sort of pushed along by Ryder,
mm-hmm.
he still felt like he was trying to control things.
Yeah. He was making choices.
If they wanted to do the gender switch, I would have taken Jim out really early in the film.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
When he almost slides into the guy, go out and check on him. See if he's okay. That's when he's killed.
Yeah.
Then she just plows out of
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
Looking for help. And that's when the game starts.
Yeah. Or she's worked. Going to meet him somewhere, and that's...
I would have had him killed in the first...
Yeah.
In that first
outing. You need to have that kill.
He needs to not be there, right?
He needs to not be there.
Because, you need the isolation.
I mean, granted, then you need something else for that truck scene. And that's what the remake kind of hitched its wagon on.
Yeah. Yes. But I mean,
which unfortunately hitched on it too much.
Yeah. But I had the weirdest thought about it. Because C. Thomas Howell is like so young in that original movie. And the whole time I had the worst thought. I just kept thinking like, oh, well, Sophia Bush does have a deeper voice than C. Thomas Howell.
she has a very distinctive voice.
Like it felt like his was cracking a lot.
They both sound like cartoon characters.
To a certain extent, especially at the beginning, like C. Thomas Howell. And
I think he had puberty while he was driving.
Yeah.
Because
his voice did
so
change
small.
Throughout the movie. And I don't know if that was deliberate, right? That just sort of, like, just a really subtle change in who he's
becoming. Maybe, and I think so, from boy to man, right?
Yeah.
That, I mean, there is a big growth in his character from start to finish.
Yeah, so, and I feel like because it happens so gradually, and I don't think I've ever noticed it before,
mm-hmm.
this rewatch is the way that he becomes more assertive, and his voice deepens. It just so it's if that was the intent, it was some really really subtle filmmaking, and I really appreciate that. If that
it,
was the intent.
It felt like the male equivalent of when a girl puts on like a little cutesy voice.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if that comes down to the director or actor choices or both, but they're great choices. Yeah. And like I said, it makes what's probably a very mediocre horror thriller into something a little more thrilling,
a little more elevated,
and a lot more tense.
Yeah.
And it's just something that I don't think has been recaptured. Like I said, the Jake Busey sequel, if you guys have seen it, didn't have it. As much as I like Jake Busey, I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I kind of had the same...
that was the right part for him.
And I kind of feel the same way about the remake, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's...
It's just one of those things where everything kind of clicked, and you just... It's hard to recapture that twice.
No, and that's the challenge we always have when we talk about these is on those rare occasions where they do capture the essence of the first one and do something new with it and it still clicks. This remake tried. They did try something different, which is what we always ask for.
Mm-hmm.
But it was poorly executed.
Yeah, I don't think they tried enough different. Like, there is enough holes in the film, the original film, as Trish says, that you can... work with that and come up with something new.
Yes.
And just throwing an extra body in there just kind of diminishes the tension that the original was successful at.
And I had no objection to the gender swap. I think that a gender swap was not a bad thing.
I did with how they
but
did
you're
it.
Right
but
with
how they did it is right.
Yeah. You're right with exactly like it should have been earlier. And then that would have totally made a huge difference.
Yeah. I mean, it does cause a problem with the truck scene, but...
But like Trish said, it doesn't have to be somebody that they're emotionally connected to.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you just put in a terrible situation. But we're talking about...
And why do the same scene twice? Like, it's memorable the first time. You can come up with something else.
Yeah, get creative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you talk Platinum Dudes, I just realized something as well. She spends, like, most of her... She's in a jean skirt the entire time. And I'm like, that's just a Platinum Dudes trope. Overall, it's like, think of all the number of movies you've seen where the female lead is in a jean skirt.
Hey,
and a tank top.
And a tank top.
She started in her PJs, so
yeah,
just so we could see her getting dressed in the car.
Yes,
yeah. You know, well, again,
titillations.
Dudes.
Yeah,
titillations.
Yeah, right. And I mean, I'm not a woman, clearly, but I can't imagine that a denim skirt is something you'd want to be wearing during a road trip. You'd want to be wearing sweats or
you
something comfortable.
You do not.
Because I know when I road trip, I don't want to wear jeans. I always wear sweatpants or shorts.
I mean, it's really hot. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. Even if they did jean shorts, I could get it. Or like just, some pair of shorts.
Something functional.
Yeah,
like the jean skirt. I think it's just because I also dislike jean skirts in general, like under any circumstances.
All right, well, that sounds like fashion police are getting involved in this one.
Well, no, it's like it's as a skirt, at least if you have a flowy fabric, it's easier to move in, but denim is just so constrictive, and then you're in a skirt, which is supposed to give you more freedom of movement, and it's like the worst of both worlds.
Maybe she was just trying to wear something slightly seductive for her boyfriend when they make their first pit stop.
Then there's other skirts you can wear, lady. I can take you shopping. This will happen.
I want video of you taking Sophia Bush shopping.
The character that she plays, I'll take her shopping.
Either way, nice. I'm fine with it.
Exactly. But yeah.
But yeah, I guess the point is you can always tell when a man directed a movie because they always have the girl in the tight denim skirt.
Well, no, it's specifically Platinum Dunes, I feel.
Yeah.
And a man does it, but the tank top, perfectly functional. I am on board with it.
Good point, music video guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Does she look good standing next to the car?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We look good standing next to a good rating on iTunes, though.
Yay.
You know, we look best next to 5 stars.
We do. Anything less than that, like we wash out.
We do.
It's not a good color for us.
You know, if you get anything less, then it's kind of fattening.
It's ill-fitting.
And people just don't get the whole picture.
No.
Like the picture of our thumbs.
Yes.
Which they will get.
They will get that.
I'll get Sam to take a picture of our thumbs before he leaves for a Twitter page.
For a Twitter page, yeah. We'll get it.
And you can see our thumbs at Invasion Remake on Twitter.
We can make it about best Hitcher thumb.
Yeah, if you've listened, you'll know which one's mine. If you haven't, you're going to be going, what the hell are they doing posting thumbs on Twitter?
Best Twitter poll ever.
That would be awesome. If we start a whole thing where people can become obsessed with thumbs, I would be a happy person.
Oh, man. To start that.
The internet's all thumbs now. I don't know what happened.
It's because everybody uses their phones.
Yeah. Yes.
It's all thumbs.
Look at the thumbs on that guy.
Thumbs were the epitome of beauty.
That would be amazing.
I'm sure there's some culture, or at some point in history, they were a measure of beauty.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You can use your sexy thumbs to also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Of course, we're Invasion of the Remake. And you can even write us an email, invasiontheremake@gmail.com. Send us your requests, your suggestions, your comments, your corrections.
Ooh, or thumbs.
Or thumbs.
Or thumbs. Or thumbs up on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can give us some thumbs up on YouTube. That's right. Yeah, you kind of screwed up the whole freaking YouTube thing, but I like how you went with that.
Sometimes you got to take the opportunity.
You got to take the opportunity there. Yeah, give us a thumbs up on YouTube, and while you're there, subscribe and ring that bell for notifications. That's right.
Using your thumbs.
Using your thumbs.
Before this episode, did you realize how important thumbs were? I just did.
I bet you do now.
Yeah.
Because you can write those reviews. You can use it to slide over to 5 stars.
Exactly. It's that one digit that separates us. From a lot of other species. Let's embrace that.
Yeah, use your opposable thumbs for good.
Mm-hmm. Yes, not evil.
Not evil.
Like the Hitcher did.
You can use another digit to point people to where to find us. You can use, maybe Sam could with his thumb.
I could do it with my thumb.
Right, oh,
he could
absolutely.
Only do it with his thumb, but I might need my index finger to do that.
Exactly.
And if you could point them to the perfect app or whatever to find us, you already know where to find us, but please tell them where to find us. We are at Invasion Remake, of course, on our social media. But you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Blueberry, Libsyn, Radio Public, the radio.com app, and even
frickin' YouTube.
So help everybody get their
earballs
on the show.
Yes. Their earballs and thumbs on the show.
Earballs and thumbs.
Yes.
Oh, I don't know how I feel
what
about
is
that.
Our obsession
that
with
was weird.
Body parts.
I don't know. Today it's getting a little weird.
It's getting a little
We've got Sam's butt and armpit.
And we've had way grosser horror movies on our show.
Yes.
So I'm not sure where the body parts all come from, but most of them are yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't take the opportunity to be disgusting, guys, when you comment.
Please
don't. I don't want to get requests for certain body parts.
No.
Because it might happen.
Unless we get Blue Chew as a sponsor.
Exactly.
Then maybe.
And gosh darn it, don't objectify Sam. He's a person.
Don't judge him by his thumb.
Exactly.
Yeah, please don't.
All right, well, This was a good one. You know, it's nice. Like I said, this is one of my favorite Rutger Hauer movies.
It was a pleasure to watch
him. I think we'll do one more next week to round out our memories of Rutger Hauer. We'll do a remake next week of one of his hidden gems, I think.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's one that we've talked about
countless times.
Yeah. Countless times. Yeah. We won't tell you what it is yet. But yeah, it's one that Jay and I have been kind of chomping at the bit to do, actually.
Yeah, and you know, 201 episodes, and things take a while sometimes to get to. But it's nice that over 200 episodes, and there's still things we're really excited to get to.
Mm-hmm.
So
we'll never run out of stuff, guys.
I don't think so. And we've had a couple of good remakes. We'll see part 2 of It this year. Pet Sematary's already happens. Yeah. Jacob's Ladder's coming out later this year. Chucky's already been out, Child's Play.
Yeah.
So that's just the year, guys.
Yeah, so you may even see one or more of those in our All the Horror episodes.
Yeah.
Quite possibly. But
we never run low on those.
No.
No. Speaking of All the Horror, of course, follow All the Horror at All the Horror 18 on Twitter, because of course we're going to be a part of All the Horror again this year, as well as our regular listeners know we're all about the horror in October anyway. We coined the term, and this convention for your ears, this horror convention for your ears, is having its second annual All the Horror in October again. A new podcast dropping every day for the month of October with a horror theme. And other writers and artists are involved as well.
Yeah, we have included writers this year. We have some artists who we're waiting to see sort of what they come up with. But yeah, whatever we have to share from this wonderful group of people we've put together, we're going to start sharing it throughout the month of October. We had some fun lead-up stuff happens that started as of the day of this recording. We started the villains polls. Right, which will be partway through by the time you hear this. But if you aren't already following us and voting in those polls, follow All the Horror and check out the villain versus villain polls.
Yeah, I can't believe you're like doing this all by yourself, Sam. But
yeah,
our friend Drew from Real Feels is actually stepped up recently, and he's actually doing the polls.
Awesome.
And he's been helping me with some of this other stuff. But yes, up until recently, I was putting it all together just because I'm so excited about it.
It was a lot of fun to be part of that last year, and we got to have a lot of guests on our show to help us with some remakes we were doing. We're going to do that again this year, and I'm not going to tell you what those are. You're just going to have to wait and find out. I'm looking forward to seeing what other podcasters' thoughts about some of the films we're going to be covering. And of course, you can, like I said, follow All the Horror at the Hall of Horror 18, and also watch for that hashtag All the Horror to be tagged. And if you're following that on Twitter, you'll be notified of the episodes that are dropping on October and all the other content that's happening. And you get to participate in all those fun polls and other activities there as well.
Yes.
And of course, we're going to be doing our daily 31 Days of Horror again this year.
It's our fourth one. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Oh, wow. So,
fourth one for you guys. Fourth one for the podcast. I've lost count of how many times I've done it. I used to blog about it over on MySpace. It's too bad those are lost.
Yes.
When you just said MySpace, people know it's been a long time.
But people look at me like, how do you still have horror movies you've never seen? I'm like, because they keep making more.
Yeah, exactly. They make more, you know. We're not capped at how many horror movies.
You'd be surprised what horror movies and classic ones that I have not yet seen. So,
because there are so many.
There are so many.
There
so
are thousands and
as
thousands.
As you can tell,
thousands.
We're chomping at the bit to get to Horror Month and all the horror. So.
Yes. So excited.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was at least it for The Hitcher, our horror movie for this week. And we'll see you next week for another Rucker Hauer movie. I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And I continue to be Trish.
And I guess we're going to have to hitchhike our way out of here.
Thumbs out.
Yeah. Thumbs out.
You useless.